welcome to the Carly Pilk Boys podcast. We're having a chat about the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows, obviously. I'm David Ferrier.
Stephen Merchant.
We're two little Australian radio fellas. We've air-checked every episode of Series 1. This is our season recap. Welcome to it. We're going to be picking our top five episodes of the first series. Zach, looking back, you have now listened to 23 episodes of the Ricky Gervais show. You'd never heard them before. What are you feeling now that we're 23 episodes in?
What would you expect me to feel? Like, what would your expectations be? You love this show. I imagine lots of people listening, well, actually exclusively love this show. I don't know why you would be listening if you had no interest.
Are there any hate listeners out there?
XFM show. Because I am conscious that it means a lot to you. I don't. Because, you know, it holds a special place in your life, you know. Is it takes you back to a certain time and place where it doesn't do any of that for me, obviously. I'm hearing it for the first time. And so, yeah, I'm wondering what you would hope that I got out of it.
I would hope that you just recognize what a unique show it is.
The major takeaway I have, or the thing that I've enjoyed listening to, is the discovery and progression of Carl. I say that I've been a long time fan, but I've really only seen it in abroad. So, like, I consider myself a fan of Carl, but I guess I'm not that across his work. And so, like, in this series, you saw them kind of come across him practically live on air. They're introduced, and then you see that relationship develop. And by the end, Carl and Ricky are kind of hanging out by themselves. They have their own jokes and stuff like that. And so I enjoy the origin stories. We all love origin stories, don't we? We that's what all these superhero movies were for a while. And so it's kind of like the origin story of that working relationship, which went on to make all these different things.
It's not only so funny and so full of like iconic comedy moments that are so quotable, but it is such a rare sort of culmination of things, including the development of that relationship, which went on to be very prosperous. But it's also like the moment in Ricky and Steve's career where it's really starting to take off and we're sort of along for the ride. Absolutely love it.
I'm always fascinated with big performers, you know, people like Ricky. I do enjoy going back to seeing their early work, like regardless who it is. Like, I love watching the first thing they did when they were undiscovered, or and see how it relates to their most famous stuff. And so, and in relation to like, had they discovered themselves yet? You know, we've talked before on this show, and I hate to be a white boy cliche, but how I love Wes Anderson movies, and Bottle Rocket was his first film, and I love watching that. Because it was like kind of, there's like inklings to what his trademarks become.
Yeah, it's almost there.
Like they're just inklings.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see like the seeds of ideas. And I think maybe that gives me hope. We're like 4 minutes into this that I'm philosophizing on my own life and my own creative journey.
Yeah, I'll leave you alone. This is a little philosophy corner about yourself. Go.
But, you know, it gives you a little bit of, you know, you go, well, especially Ricky, like, you know, because he's a bit later in life. And you go like, oh, yeah, like he had just done The Office. So I guess you could say that he had discovered his thing. But in the sense of like them all working together and in radio, it was just kind of the beginning. Yeah. And so, I don't know, I'm always thinking about that. Do you ever think about like, if you discovered your thing yet? Have you done your thing?
Always. And
you're always thinking that.
I'm always thinking that. Like, that's why I'm doing so many various things. I'm trying to find what the thing is. Like, at the end of every show, I say, go check out my cartoon Instagram account. Like, is that the thing? Is this the thing? I don't know. The only thing I do know for sure, and I'm pretty certain about this at this point, is that the only way you find your thing is by doing things. And that's partly why I'm doing this right now, is to just keep trying stuff. So yeah, I agree, and I think that you say that, well, they found the thing because they just did The Office, but it's like they did The Office, but they didn't know it was going to become what it was, and they're sort of living through that sort of slowly revealing itself. I find that very interesting about the show.
I did just want to make a quick comment on your interview with Andrew, the XFM creative director or content director. Do you think there's a bit of revisionist history in the idea? He was talking about how funny Carl was to work with. Well, firstly, I found it really interesting that he was talking about how brilliant Carl was as Radio Mind. And I thought, oh, that's the first person to be like, oh, Carl was actually really good at radio before this show. That's why we put him there, to kind of be the radio dude. I thought that was fascinating. But do you think there's some revisionist history talking about how funny Carl was? Do you think he found Carl that funny in that moment, or now 20 years later that Carl's known as this like funny guy? He's like, yeah, I always found him funny. What do you reckon?
I think they could both be true. I think there's a bit of, it could both be a little bit of revisionist.
He's the first one. He's the first one out of everyone we've spoken to who said he was funny. Most people are like, oh, he's just a normal guy.
Well, yeah, because I also spoke to Byron, and you've been working with someone who worked with him.
That's right. That was, I mentioned this in the show that was deleted. I forgot that happened. You might not have known this, but the guy I was sitting next to in a job in an ad agency was telling me that he worked at XFM. This is in Brisbane, Australia. Like recently, this happened this year. He was telling me how he was a copywriter at XFM in like whatever, the year 2001. And I was like, was that when the Ricky Gervais show was on? And he's like, yeah. I sat in a room with Carl Pilkington. And I was like, what? That's crazy. And he's like, yeah, he's just an ordinary guy, like nothing out of the ordinary about him. But yeah, he said he would come in on the weekend to do work and he would sit in the office, and he said that he could hear Ricky Gervais's cackle down the hallway from the studio.
Amazing. I think, I got the impression from my conversation with Andrew that he knew Carl pretty well and they worked together somewhat closely.
Yeah, so, that was fascinating.
Before he became the program controller. So when he said he was great at radio and had a great radio mind, I put that in the context of him as someone who was a imaging producer and someone who just worked in radio for a long time. I did actually send some follow-up questions, which at the end of the interview I said, like, oh, I've sent him an email with these follow-ups, because as is sort of expected, as soon as the interview was over, because during it I'm thinking about time, I'm thinking about the internet connection, I'm thinking about, like, you know, wrapping things up. Then as soon as it was over, I was like, didn't ask this. And I wanted to know about, like, the conversation. He'd sort of touched on it, the conversation to get Carl to do the Saturday show, whether or not it was like, hey, I think you guys might, you know, be a good match, or was he just... Andrew says in the interview, like, oh, he was my go-to fall guy. It was like, I'll get Carl to do it. I want to know a bit more about that. And I just haven't heard back from him yet. So I don't know. Maybe that's something else I could probably follow up with him.
Those guys are always, there's always a guy like that in radio stations, Faye. I'm hoping that Carl was compensated.
That's so true.
Because sometimes they're taken advantage of. But there's always a guy.
There's always a martyr who... works.
Yeah, it's like always getting every weekend shift, and the boss knows they can rely on them to do the OB from Harvey Norman or whatever it is.
And nowadays, it's also, they're all also the one who's scheduling the whole radio station, and then pre-recording two weekend shifts, and is always the fill-in guy who is completely overworked. Is there when you arrive and still there when you leave. I can think of every single person at every single radio station I've worked at. Carl might have been that person.
I've never worked in a radio station where there wasn't one employee constantly on the brink of a breakdown. Like, there's always conversation like, this has to stop. Like, we need to go above, you know, someone's head. Like, this, the way we're working isn't sustainable. Like, but it's just constant. And every place I've worked has always been that.
I've had lots of conversations with... about, we need a union. This is unacceptable. You should not be, because what happens, like, you know, the way radio's going and budgets are tightening and the spend, and, you know, it's FM radio. Like, who's listening to it? It's not exactly booming. So jobs are being made redundant. So then they go, oh, well, you just do that job someone else was doing. We're not going to give you any extra money. You're just absorbing that role, and we'll make some little cosmetic changes. But essentially you're getting two people's job for the price of one. So there's been a lot of like, oh, we need to organize. This is just, nah, this is crazy. And then nothing happens.
They're trying to get a collective bargaining agreement. Let's rally everyone together. I think the way that where it's at, the bosses will just be like, oh, well, the computers can just do it anyway, guys.
Yeah, so exactly. That's whenever I've said that to people who have then gone, nah, it's always that like, well, look, I'm just lucky that I have a job. And I go, that's what they want you to think.
The amazing thing.
They're relying on that.
The amazing thing about radio stations, I was saying that, you know, I've been doing some work in an ad agency where we would go and record voiceovers, and we'd go to a studio and there would be three people from the client, there'd be three people from the agency, there'd be an audio producer, there would be a voiceover person, and to record four lines would take 4 hours. And you'd go, whatever it is, open day, or, you know, or the sale starts August 24. Could we try it again? And you go up a little bit on August 24. Okay, August 24. 10% more enthusiasm. August 24. And the client's looking and they're nodding and they go, I reckon that one's it. I reckon that last one now.
Felt good.
In radio, it's like the door doesn't even shut in the voiceover booth. Like if you're recording something like that, they would get someone from like the promotions team. It'd be like, hey, Doug, can you come do this voiceover? They'd go in, wouldn't even put the headphones on, smash it out, turn around, go back to their job. And so everyone's overworked and everyone has six jobs, but it's efficient.
It gets stuff done. That's something I love, that I genuinely love about radio. I love how fast paced it is. I love that it's like in content when you're doing your show, Zach, you're like, I got an idea for this. And then you just smash it, you work it out and you do it. It goes well or it doesn't go well and you move on. I love that. That's something I think is fairly unique to radio as well.
Certainly. Although, you know, with the internet, the content turnaround has become faster with social media, where you can pump stuff out pretty quick.
That's true.
But yeah, compared to TV, certainly.
You can see that for yourself, Zach Mander on TikTok. See some fast turnaround internet content.
Sure. I don't have any. I'm pretty confident that no one has ever gone and checked out my TikTok after hearing this podcast.
Haven't they?
Like the UK followers are basically nothing. I looked at my percentages the other day. There's like Australia and America are the main two. And there's like no one from the UK.
Zach, so. Z-A-C-H, Mander, M-A-N-D-E-R. Go follow him. Go leave him a comment. I don't know how many people listening to this show are on TikTok. I think
that could be the issue.
I've had a couple of little comments from people on Instagram. But Zach's on Instagram as well. Hey, also, speaking of which, we're on Instagram. I have started one for the show, carly.pilkboys. Look it up on Instagram. I'll explain why I've started it now at the end of series one. It seems a bit ridiculous, but I'll explain why at the end of the show. If you do want to give it a follow, I have posted something. It's a picture that Andrew Phillips showed me, his copy of The Office DVD, and on the front is a message that Ricky wrote to Andrew. It's on the front cover of the DVD. Carly.pilkboys on Instagram. Now, emails, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. This one is from Sean. Hey, guys, just listened to the end of series episode. Couple of things mentioned in the pod I thought I'd bring to your attention. The 2002 FA Cup final Ricky put a bet on. Well, he did a little skit for the coverage on that day for the BBC as David Brent. Zach, you can look it up. Look up David Brent's Guide to Football Management. I gave it a watch before we recorded. It's very good. And Sean also says that Suede, of course, gets played in the show. And in their early days, Ricky was their manager.
Really?
In his pre-comedy life, post being a pop star and pre-comedy, he was he worked for a management company. So here's something
isn't that incredible that he made the transition to comedy? How did that happen?
It was his third career. It was, what was it? I think it was because of XFM, because he got involved in XFM in the early days and then started doing a show. Someone can correct me, email us, but I think it went from there and he started doing stuff on air and it was funny, and then he got an opportunity to be a correspondent on the 11 o'clock show. And then it went from there. Like he had, we'll get to this later, but the, he did a chat show called Meet Ricky Gervais. And I'll explain a way that we could potentially watch stuff like that and cover it for this show later. Anyway, in an interview with Time Out, bass player Matt Osman said, yeah, he worked for our management company back in the day, sending out Suede demo tapes and stuff. He was a very pretty boy, like a young Bowie. You have to check out his band Shona Dancing. When he made it on TV, I did the longest double take. He was always a really snarky bugger. He really was. I'm really glad he's a comedian rather than a manager, because he was a fucking shit manager. however, the band was indebted to Gervais for finding them their first and last permanent drummer, Simon Gilbert.
Wow. Okay, that's fascinating. That explains his how actually the way I think about it now is if he was a manager, XFM was like a kind of this alternative cool radio station. I can see how he was in those circles. But yeah, if you take the comedy context out of it, I can see how he'd be snarky.
Yeah.
Because now you're like, oh, he's just being a comedian. But if he's not coming off the base of being a comedian, sometimes you'd be like, okay.
That was, all right, you prick.
That was a bit sharp.
Thank you for that email, Sean. This one is from Kyle, who's listening in Philadelphia. So last week, Zach, I mentioned, so on the day that we recorded episode 23, something weird was happening with our downloads. They were going through the roof. It turned out later, I said, I think all of the Ricky Gervais show has been taken off Spotify. So I suggested that may have happened, and that we were talking about, oh, people are probably accidentally finding this show, hoping it's the Ricky Gervais show. Well, that is exactly what happened. Kyle says, when I heard you say your downloads exploded when the show was taken off Spotify, I laughed because that's exactly how I found you. I sometimes throw the show on before bed to unwind, and one day it was gone. But I saw your podcast and gave it a try. Really enjoying it. Best of luck. Thank you, Kyle. Thanks, Keith, Kyle. Our old mate Keith. All right, you fulking Aussie cund. I did indeed listen all the way through the episode of your Tin Pot Niche cast and have a suggestion. When it gets to the stage where Rockbusters is introduced, I think you should give the clues to Zach a week early each time so that we can hear him try to work it out. Love it, Keith.
Is Rockbusters like a music quiz? What is it?
Oh, I love that you're saying that. He has no idea what Rockbusters is, everyone. How exciting. Well, let's just wait and see. It becomes a permanent fixture on the show. Keith's email concludes with, having a little break, are you? How many holidays do you take a year? Me and Steve are always too busy for holidays. Next thing, you'll be getting Mondays off too. David Ferrier, takes, destroys a man. Thank you, Keith. A reference from Series 3. And finally, this one is a listener in Adelaide. Oh, I didn't write her name down. Let me find it. I think it's Amber. Yes, Amber. Hello from Adelaide. I've recently binged through all of your niche cast after hearing about it on Reddit. I'm one of the mental fans who hasn't stopped listening on loop to the XFM shows for about 10 years. I even have a tattoo of the three of them to show my love for the show. So she's attached a picture, and it's the cartoon versions from the animated series. So this is Amber, a listener in Adelaide, who has a tattoo of Ricky, Steve and Kyle on her leg, I think it is. She then goes on and says, I thought you might find it interesting that I discovered the XFM shows through an interview that Hamish and Andy did with Ricky and Carl during their afternoon drive show. I haven't been able to find the clip anywhere, but if I remember right, they talked about games like The Rice is Right and may have even played around. I 100% agree. Steve is the unsung hero behind the production of the shows and brings the much-needed structure to what could be chaos. Keep up the amazing work. Can't wait to listen to what else you guys have to say, especially when we get to the Rockbusters episodes. Thank you, Amber. Did you hear that at all?
I did hear that. That's how I learned about the show as well. But I just never, you know, I probably Googled it, couldn't find the audio anywhere, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to go searching for it. But Hamish and Andy were probably my, you know, what this show is to you, in the sense of, like, you know, I listened to that show every afternoon when I was a teenager. And I remember that because I remember they had a guy named Hawks who did inventions on their show.
Yeah.
And I remember in the interview they brought up, hey, our friend Hawks is a lot like your friend Carl. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of Carl. And Ricky was talking about, you know, this guy Carl who he's just met and he says all this crazy stuff. And yeah, also Hamish and Andy mentioned them, Ricky Gervais, as why they started podcasting is because they had to convince, these were a very successful and still are very successful, the most successful radio show in Australian history probably. And they said that they had to convince the radio station to do podcasting because Ricky Gervais was doing it. And, you know, that gave them the idea. So that's interesting.
That's awesome.
I also like that. I think Amber's the first Australian we've listened heard from.
Yeah.
And possibly one of the first females. Is she?
Yeah, one of the very few. I had a guy in Brisbane in my Instagram who yeah, but certainly first email from an Australian listener. So thank you, Amber. I listen.
Are you not trying to draw attention to the fact that all the emails are from that?
Are from dudes?
Yeah,
I've accepted that that's just a reality of this show, and I'm okay with that. I don't care.
Think it appeals more to men?
I think it does, like, just based on looking at the breakdown of who's active in the Facebook communities, who's emailing us. I've tried to introduce, because it's stupid.
Yeah, right, okay.
And so, Amber, I am calling you stupid for liking this show. I've tried to introduce it to my girlfriend who's into not really into comedy stuff, and she just doesn't care.
That's so interesting that there would be, I guess that makes sense, that there'd be that. I don't know, because I was looking on my online followings this morning and there's like a heavy skew towards female.
Yeah, same here with my Instagrams.
I was trying to figure out why that is. I'm like, I talk about my baby. I thought maybe guys are less interested in parenting stuff. I don't know. I couldn't figure out why. Yeah, I don't have that heavy skew. And then this show has the skew the other way. So I'm like, well, I don't know. Can't figure it out.
I think maybe because, like, it's a bit snarky, it's childish. It's stuff that, like, I really like, and I'm a very typical boy. Like, you know, I grew up with two brothers. I watched The Simpsons, right. And I went skateboarding with my boy mates, and I was scared of girls. So
wait, hang on. Is Simpsons male as well?
Well, probably less so than this show, but that's more just.
Well, I guess.
Okay, let me rephrase. Dudes. I watched The Simpsons and Rush Hour in Rush Hour 2, and I played video games. I just did very, like, boy stuff. So, yeah.
You know, the show is three guys.
Yeah, it's three dudes. Yeah. I heard Ricky, Carl, and Steve on Australian radio talking to Fitzy and Whipper when they were promoting, I think it was one of the DVDs of the animated show, and they were talking about their old radio show, and they were, you could hear them trying to remember things, which is like, having heard that from then on, I was like, oh, they do not remember doing this show. Like, they don't remember a lot of the details, because they were saying there was like a DVD that we used to always give away. And Steve says, I think it was Ladder 49, which they do later on. They constantly are giving away copies of Ladder 49. So
is that the John Travolta?
Yeah, the firefighter. Film? Yeah, yeah. So it's not as near and dear to their hearts as us fans like us. It is them who can quote every single detail. And it was good. And Fitzy and Whipper were giving them the sort of reverence that I was hoping for. They were clearly like fans. But I was listening to that interview going, I could ask way better questions. What I would do to have the three of them just on the phone.
Well, when you described before your thought process talking to the content director, where you're like, I've got to get my questions right. Is the internet connection good? What's my times like? I was thinking, imagine if you were talking to Ricky. What, like, that internal dialogue of everything that would be running through your head.
I would just be thinking, I really hope you haven't listened to any of the episodes and heard how much shit I talk about Afterlife and how much I do not like the public persona that he seems to be now. Yeah, I was so stressed about the internet connection because it was slightly dodgy. But oh well, thank you for all those emails. CarlyPilkboys@carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. All right, let's do the top five. Zach and I have each chosen our top five episodes from series one. Zach, I'll tell you right now that I broke the rules. I've done a top six, so I think I should start. Right. Because I just I couldn't pick.
Misunderstood. I thought we were together coming up with the top five, so I just had to come with some favorite episodes.
Oh, well, can you have five on the fly?
Probably. I've got a top three, I think, two or three, and then the others can just fill out the top five. What I've done is without looking at any of the episodes, I tried to remember bits. Mm-hmm. And I thought any bit that I could remember probably is the most iconic bit. Mm-hmm. And so then I went and looked for what episode they were in to see if there was any supporting bits in there.
Okay, cool. Well, I think that will work. I've done a similar thing, only I did go through the show notes for every single episode and I weighted up based on not only just the things that click with me the most, but the bits that are indicative of some major turning point in the show's run. So with that in mind, at number six in my top five is episode 14, Carl's GCSE results. This is the one where he finds out that he only got an E in history and his reaction was not what Steve and Carl, Ricky, were expecting. It's also the one where Carl gives his Gladiator review. He says it's like Rocky, but in the olden days. And a segment that I love, The Friends Reunited, where Steve goes through some of Carl's old mates from school and we hear about Carl's pet magpie, Maggie. So that is my number six episode in the top five, Carl's GCSE results. So
hang on. I've got here that his magpie was in episode five.
Well,
we hear it twice.
He brings it up. He says he had a pet magpie and then in the GCSE results. Yeah, it's not the first time that Maggie is mentioned, no.
Which one is the one where he tells the story about it pecking him and going to school with it? Is that the first time or second time?
I think he does it in both.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. What is your number five?
Let's go with episode 15, which is Carl's brother, is the main bit out of that. You know, his brother was kicked out of the army for nicking down to the shops in a tank and then sleeping with the commander's wife, I think it was.
Yeah.
Sergeant's wife.
Wilkinson.
No, he ended up being a mechanic in there and he got kicked out for going for a packet of fags in a tank.
What? Now, wait a minute. Do you mean he nipped down the shops in a tank?
Yeah.
I don't believe that, Carl. You've
honest to God, that, and he went off with the sergeant's wife. So that didn't help, and he ended up getting kicked out.
Sorry, your brother's a genius.
That's the main bit, but I think there's, you know, that's also where he goes through Che Guevara's little book. He's given all these different historical figures to go through. So that was another big point from that.
Okay, so actually I should start noting these down because I do not know what Zach's choices are, as we've established.
Carl's brother would have to be in your top five, though, right?
Oh, well, no. We'll just wait and see. My number five is... Sorry, I'll just write down. My number six was episode 14, GCSEs. My number five is episode 3, Steve's birthday. Because it's one where they make some progress with Carl. It's still in those very early days where Carl's contributions are mostly him having a go at Steve and then fighting each other. But there's the important moment where Carl says, Steve says to someone says to Carl, Carl, why don't you contribute something? And then he says,
I was just thinking there is nobody else who looks like Steve.
He's done ya.
And instead of getting offended, Steve says, that is outrageous. Although ironically, it has saved us. So I think that's really good. It's got the iconic story of Steve's bad gift giving, that for his birthday one year, he was given the wartime speeches of that's Winston right. Churchill on cassette.
But he said to me once, never forget, son. He didn't.
Yeah, and I went, I don't remember, Dad.
And it's also before, it's also before it becomes so Carl-centric that the other guys don't do anything.
That's right.
Like, it's back in like maybe the first 5 to 10. I was actually surprised with how long it went on for when I was looking through the track listings. It might be the first 10 episodes. Ricky and Steve are still bringing stuff every week, like prepared ideas that they want to talk about, whether it's a segment or a story or whatever. And then by like the last 5, it's just like, we're just talking to Carl for 2 hours.
Yeah. So this is a good one because you also get Steve's, he's hungover because he went out the night before and got into the club for free by mentioning he's an XFM DJ, and he ruins the anecdote. He gets the anecdote wrong about trying to bribe the bouncer. It's a very strong Steve episode, and Carl doesn't say that much, but when he does, he absolutely hits it out of the park. So that is my number 5. What is your number 4?
Episode 5, so an early one as well. That was the first mention of Carl's magpie. And there's also another moment that I really liked when Carl at the end, because it's so typical of his attitude, but also of what I think is good radio. He's like being anti-radio, where he can't be bothered to give out the number because usually you're so desperate for calls, so desperate. You'll do anything. Like I've heard people give out the number 6 times in the one segment.
I do that
just
sometimes.
Like begging for a call.
Yeah.
And Carl's like, he's like, I can't be bothered. Can't be bothered to give out the number. I'm not picking up a phone. Are you serious? I don't want to talk to someone.
That's a very good point.
And to me, that's kind of, you know, it's kind of an anti-radio show. My favorite radio shows have always been these shows that are kind of a little bit meta. They make fun of radio.
Yeah.
But there's a very niche audience who enjoys that because you kind of have to know the rules they're breaking to find it funny.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people know that.
And just the security to be like, yeah, I'm just going to do it. Like, because I'm still, I reckon, a pretty insecure radio host. Like when I do phoners and I just do, I just do the show on my own. I don't have a co-host. So like, for example, I'll do, you say about saying the number a bunch of times. I'll go like, oh, have you found, a phoner I've actually done is like, have you found cash? And it will be like 133353. Should probably not say the actual phone number. 133333. Have you found cash? It could have been on the side of the road. It could have been in a wardrobe. You could have found it anywhere. Give us a call right now. 133333. Did you find cash? Was it in a plastic bag? Was it buried somewhere? Was it just floating down the street? 133. You know, like just the. I'm telling you what I want. Please, if it's any of these examples, call. I am desperate because I have nothing to back it up if this doesn't work. Call me now, 133333. Like, that's just that. And I think that's more typical. I have had the note from radio bosses like, hey, man, stop saying the phone number so many times.
Have I ever told you the story where because we did a national show in the, so that means that at a certain point, The phones have to be diverted, which means like in every city that they're in, if you call the number at a certain time, it will go to the local station. But when it goes national, it has to hit like a macro. I have no idea how it happened, but something has to be programmed that when it hits a certain time, everyone in the country can call the same number and it goes to your studio.
It's technical wizardry.
But because we were late at night, like, you know, we were forgotten about a lot. And so sometimes they would forget to divert it. For some reason, I thought it was just automatic. Anyway, this night when we're back from holidays once, so, you know, that was when they were meant to, they had different settings during the holiday period. No one told them we were back. First night, 2 hours of a show largely based around calls, we get no calls. And we're so down because we're like, oh, man, we've had 2 weeks off. Are we really rusty with those segments, like not connecting with people? We're like, okay, don't worry. We're a team huddle. We'll come back tomorrow night, smash it out of the park. First half of the next night, no calls. And we're like, are we just the worst radio announcers in the world? We're like, let's just call up see if the phones are down. And we were cautious also that if you call up and they go, no, the phones are up and running, like, it makes you look pretty silly.
I have done that exact thing.
We're just bad.
Yep, I've tested. I go, oh, let's see if the phones are working. Yep, they're working. It's just no one's calling.
So then they go, yeah, the phones are down. Sorry about that. We fixed it now. Try again. So we do another segment, falls dead flat. We call them up. They go, no, we didn't say try now. We meant try after 11. They're resetting after 11. We try after 11. Again, fall flat. They're like, oh, my goodness. It was like six segments in a row because we're online with tech and they just keep going, try phones again. And I'm just like, this is the most humiliating radio because every 3 minutes we're coming back and asking another question and giving out the phone number. A listener is going to think that we just are just like burning through every question we can think of just trying to get one call. It was like the worst night ever. It like totally chipped away any self-esteem I had of like it's just so debilitating as an announcer to constantly be asking for calls, not getting any. The irony being, I doubt anyone noticed.
Yeah.
Like you ride and die on that so much as an announcer. You're in the studio staring at the log, seeing these phone calls come in. But if you're listening, I don't think anyone goes after 6 minutes of two songs. And then if you just talk about another thing, I don't think anyone goes, hang on. They said they were going to talk to callers 6 minutes ago and they didn't.
Yeah, there's every chance they went, oh, I don't like this song, and change the channel.
And they come back and then they go, oh, they're talking about something else.
Yeah, or they're not thinking that at all. They're thinking, I'm hungry. Do I have any food in the fridge or do I need to get something on the way home? That's also a very specific problem to doing a national show in a country like Australia where there are multiple different time zones. I imagine that in the UK where there's more national shows, like they're not having to swap where the phones go depending on the time of the day. It's a very it's a bit of a challenging environment to be in. So where are we? So your number four is episode four. My number four.
Five.
Huh?
This is exactly what I was afraid about this episode.
Your episode four. So your number four is episode five.
That's right.
We're all over it. My number four in this top five countdown is episode eight, Was Steve a Tall Baby? It's one of the first big laughs from Ricky when Carl says that.
Were you a tall baby? Oh,
Mr. and Mrs. Merchant, you've given birth to a basketball player.
Steve also gives us the story of when two girls said they had agreed to meet back at him for New Year's. That's one thing I've told that to my girlfriend, being like, oh, yeah, there's a thing in the show that, you know, I do the podcast about where, because the guy's really tall, that these two girls agreed to meet at him as a meeting point. And she laughed. That one translated. So Steve being a human landmark. And then it's also the one where Carl does the baguette fact about where the origin of baguettes, which it's the early incarnation of something that Carl goes on to do, which is educating. He later does a segment called Educating Ricky, where he gives three titles. They're usually wordplay or puns, and Ricky chooses which one he wants to hear about. And it is things like about, oh, the history of baguettes, and also in this episode, why people tink their glasses before they have a drink. It's the first time that Carl introduces what he believes as like fact, a story with the phrase
ages ago.
Yeah.
Only people with money had drinking or something.
That's like one of my film reviews.
This sounds like a pretty good episode. I'm going to make it my number three.
Okay.
that's a lot of moments.
Well, it's also where we hear about Ricky's pop star past. As in Shona Dancing, and Steve didn't see the TV show where they showed the clip, so he says, "Oh, I wish that they could someone could put it on a website just on a continuous loop so I could watch it." He basically pitches the idea for YouTube. So that's in episode eight. All right.
And in reference to the email we got earlier, I have also thought that before about Ricky's pop star past, that he was heavily influenced in looks by David Bowie.
Yes. Oh, he's open about that. Yeah. New Romantics. The whole sort of.
Because doesn't
fashion
Bowie does something in Extras, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
That must have been a big kick for him.
What? Yeah. How amazing. And
he tells a great story about, I don't know where I heard this, but I heard this great story about how he called up David Bowie for that episode because David Bowie writes a song in it. And Ricky said to him, yeah, if we can do something like Life on Mars. And Bowie like claps back and he's like, oh, yeah, I'll just throw together a Life on Mars. You're like,
that's
like one of these, like once in a generation masterpiece. Yeah, I'll just whip one of those together.
Sort it out for us. Couldn't have been that hard. So that's your number three is episode eight. So that's the first time we've both chosen the same episode. I've put it at four, you've put it at three. All right, well then my three is episode 15 is Carl's Brother.
Oh, there you go.
Because of all the things you said, just how casually Carl says that his brother went for a packet of fags in a tank. Oh, and he also went off with the sergeant's wife. I also love hearing about how Carl's mum called up the army to try to get his son out of going to the Falklands War. And that leads on to Ricky and Steve's riff about that phone call and being the sergeant.
Pilkington, come here. Your mum's been giving me a bit of earache. Now, listen. Tell her I've told you, but can you call her? Because she called me Chuck and everything. Can you call her and say you don't mind? Well, not really. Oh, please, because I've promised her I'll say you want to go. No, please, say you want to go. Why was he entertaining this phone call?
Has Pilkington ever got you out of something? Did we talk about this in this episode? This is a foreign concept to me. My parents would never go into bat for me in that instance.
Out of school. And when I was 18 and I did one night at a fancy restaurant, like polishing wine glasses, and I was going to work there full time. But after that one night, I went, no chance. There's no way I'm doing that. I got dad sent a fax saying David will not be returning.
From him or did he sign it like from you?
I can't remember. I think it was from him.
Wow. No, see, that's foreign to me. My parents would be like, well, mate, you got to go tell them. Like, I remember at 14, I had to quit Bilo. They taught me how to write like a resignation letter, which is so funny as a 14-year-old. I was like, from this moment forward, I'm ceasing my employment.
I have decided to pursue other opportunities in the shelf stacking industry.
Oh, that's so funny, man. That's the guy I do radio with, Dom, he did write a letter like that when he was 15 because they did business studies at school and they said that you should never, you know, say a negative thing of why you left the job. So on his resume or on his cover letter, when he talked about working in a supermarket for 2 weeks, he quit after 2 weeks. But he wrote it because he hated it. He described it as soul-crushing as a 14, 15-year-old. But he wrote on his cover letter that he left because he had achieved everything he came to. There was nothing to achieve. I had done. In those 2 weeks, I saw everything I needed to.
I've climbed the peaks of shelf stacking. Oh, my God. There are now other exciting opportunities I wish to pursue. I need to challenge myself.
On a paper run.
I've achieved everything. That's funny. What's your number two episode?
16, Carl in a Balloon.
Ah, okay.
Which is about half the episode. I don't know what's in the other half, but about half the episode is them. I think it starts because there's something about a hot air balloon. Oh, I forget how it starts, but anyway. Maybe they're just interested in how many balloons it would take to lift someone. And then the next half of the episode is about Carl going up. And it's the first thing they're all collectively excited about for multiple breaks.
I can tell you what was in the first half. This is a good one. And I'll spoil now. This is not in my top five, but it is a good one. It's got the Hitler recap. It's got the the chat about the Trick Awards where they lost, where The Office was beaten by Linda Green. White Van Carl in episode 16 is where Carl first tells the story of his girlfriend Zoe Harris, where he stepped on her dress and refused to comfort her because, as he says, the boys were playing dead arm over in the corner. They're talking, they get onto it because they're talking about the Hindenburg.
Oh, that's it.
And they get the helium hydrogen mix up. And then I've just written in the notes 6,000 balloons to get Carl up in the air. I don't know where they got that from. I think they were reading from. Where were they? Were they reading from? Oh, this is bad.
He didn't like flap all over the place and make a zany noise.
But I'll tell you what. Because when I was looking on the internet in the week for it, I was like trying to get a bit more info on it. Guess how many balloons it would take, helium balloons, to lift a human up?
Go on.
6,000.
Should we do it?
If you want.
But yeah, just the idea of the story arc, and I like to hear them all excited.
I didn't choose it because it went nowhere. I think is what I kind of marked it down for. That it's something that just faded out.
Oh, like they never actually did it.
Yeah, they didn't follow. Or they didn't at least like they didn't officially say, "Oh, by the way, we're not going to do that anymore." But I think I'm being very picky. It was very hard.
But
to pick
that
top
doesn't
five.
Bother me because, like, remember when you used to make cubby houses as a kid in the bush? Did you do that?
Yeah, of course.
Spend your holidays, putting crisscrossing a few sticks together. You'd spend 2 weeks making it, and then you'd make it, and you had nothing to do. What were you going to do, sit in there? And it was like, oh, the fun was making it. That was the whole deal.
The fun is the journey, not the destination.
So that's what I think with the balloon thing. I'm like, I don't really want to see him up in a balloon. It's just fun to talk about.
That's true. Also, it's a bit hypocritical for me to talk about things that don't go anywhere. The amount of times I've, like, tried out new segments on this show and then just never spoken about them ever again.
I said on my radio show that I was going to do a marathon in heelys. Never did it. Never mentioned it again. After a few weeks of talking about it, because I did 1 kilometer and I was like, oh, that's dumb. I'm never going to be able to do 42. And so I'm like, I'm never going to mention that again.
That still hits me as a really good idea, but I imagine it would get pretty tough on your heels and the muscles in the front of your leg after a little while.
What I was looking for something that was like shorter than a marathon but sounded a lot. And my new idea is to do the Bridge to Brisbane, which is because then you don't know how it's a fun run in the city that we're in, and it's 10 kilometers. I reckon I could do that, but see, like you don't see that collectively when you hear it sounds like it's an official event, but you don't know how long it is. Do you get what I mean? So it's kind of ambiguous because a marathon sounds like a really long way. That was why I wanted to do it.
Sounds like a
but
marathon.
But then I realized it was actually a really long way. And I was like, oh, I thought heelys would be easier than running. I don't think it is.
Would it be easier than the guy they talk about in this show, about the guy in the wetsuit who finished last in the London Marathon? If it could take you 6 days, Carl would remember you. My show number 2 in this countdown is episode 23, the last one of series 3. It is my number 2 show. I think it's great.
Wow. What did they do in that?
Well, it's the one where they won a bronze at the Sony Awards, which becomes a long-running reference that it's a bronze award-winning show. I enjoy Steve's story about doing the high jump at school. It's the show where Carl says a hairdresser once told him he has the hair of a Chinaman.
Hairdresser once said to me, "You've got hair of a Chinaman."
He was a wise man, wasn't he?
And the whole story about getting his hair cut for £2 in a wooden hut above a train station. That's all just very sort of iconic Carl stuff. And it's got Carl's Room 101s, which I remember you enjoying, Zach, that he hates.
Yeah, I did like the Room 101s. What did he hate? Spiders?
He hates the saying, money doesn't make you happy, and he's very irritated by the entitled spoiled girl with the fat ankles. He hates rude employees at supermarkets, spiders, and annoying people on holidays. It's also the show where Carl talks about doing the talent show. Doing Walk Like an Egyptian dressed up as a woman.
Oh, that was a good
one. And the magic trick with the egg. It's a great one. And then he caps it off by giving Ricky and Steve very heartwarming gifts. It's a little nice moment at the very end of series one, and that is why it is my number two in this top five.
I wondered when I spoke to when you spoke to Andrew from XFM last week, Carl doing the magician show or the talent quest came to mind, because he was talking about, you know, how Carl was this funny guy and this really clever guy and he got radio and stuff. And I was like, oh, it's interesting that if you come at it this way, if you hear about this, if you only hear select stories, say he did this talent quest where he put on this performance and he had these original ideas, and then if you heard Andrew talk about him, I'm like, you could construct this kind of narrative of this like really creative, funny guy. But that's not how we're introduced to him through Ricky. And so it's funny how like contextually, like how context plays such such a role in how you see someone.
Yeah.
Like if it wasn't for Ricky, maybe Carl would have had undoubtedly not as successful, I would imagine, but maybe he would have had some type of entertainment career where he did a bit of performing. Like he could have found his way on air. He had done overnight shows before, but you know, I don't think he would be as famous. And I wonder though whether we would just know him as like an average radio announcer and not, you know, this iconic mind.
Well, we theorized last week, Zach, on episode 23, that that he would probably be running a radio station. Like if he was, you know, a great radio mind and had this success, he would probably have worked his way through the ranks and he'd be quite high ranking at the time. And now I did ask Andrew, because we had just done this one and he's talking about doing the talent show and he's previously talked about doing Little Donkey, and later on he does these things where he inserts himself into movies and he's clearly a good actor. I asked Andrew about if he had secretly harbored any ambitions to be an announcer, and if he told Andrew that, and Andrew just categorically said no. There's no.
Interesting.
Because he didn't want to be. He thought he thought hosts and announcers were prats, which also feels very very Carl like. So that is my number two. Yeah.
In his show, in Carl's show, the scripted show, what's it called?
Sick of It.
How is he as a performer?
So he's really good. I think he's really good, and he's very comfortable on screen, and he's playing a version of himself. Well, he's playing two versions of himself. I think it's not like the greatest show ever. It's not groundbreaking, but it's just like it's a very solid show where he is in basically every single shot.
Yeah, starring.
And he's acting opposite himself, so he would have had to do that whole thing where you're acting to no one and then come back and do the other side
of it. What's the conceit? Is he a twin?
No, he's got like there's Carl, and then there's the he's playing a version of himself that never met Ricky Gervais, and so he's
really
he's a taxi driver, and he's a taxi driver in the show. No, they never say that he worked in hospital or something. I worked in radio. But he lives with his auntie, but they don't call it, we haven't gotten to this yet, but later he talks about his auntie Nora, but in the show he lives with his auntie Norma. And then there's this, it's the personified version of his inner critic, of like the negative side of himself, which is just him with a beanie on who keeps telling him to like not do stuff, or, he just offers the negative view on any given situation, and it's him trying to overcome that. It's good. It's good. It's a solid show.
Yeah, wow. I'd be fascinated to know, and maybe we can get into this somewhere down the line, how that came to be. You know, the idea of pitching TV shows and getting them over the line I find really interesting. And I'm like, was it because he was so – like, you know, he had done nothing like that before. Maybe Ricky was a bit of like a guarantor of sorts.
Well,
maybe Ricky went like, I'll look at the scripts. I'm going to make sure it's good, you know, to give like a network some permission to do it kind of thing.
He was in series one of Derek as an actor. He played like a janitor role, and it was co-created with someone who worked on Idiot Abroad. So that's right. Where they got together. Anyway, yeah, we should talk about it at another time, in another sort of format where we can talk about stuff like that. I am going to predict that I know what your number one episode is because I think it's the same one as mine.
Horse in the House.
Episode 19. We have both chosen it as our number one episodes. It is wall-to-wall great. And looking through the show notes, it's not just the Horse in the House story.
No.
It starts with Ricky putting a coin over a photo of Carl's face, and it covered it perfectly. Carl says that doing the show is the highlight of his week. Steve's story about having a chat with the extra on the set of the pilot that he's shooting is really funny. The guy who's the Guns N' Roses fan. You're looking forward to Chinese Democracy? Oh, yeah, love Guns N' Roses. Sweet chat.
Ricky also follows on with the story of the guy who's signing on.
Yeah, the one in 10.
And comes in with a big boom box and puts it above his head playing.
That's awesome. They talk about
also Carl's flowers, how he goes door to door selling flowers that he's picked and are stuck in soil.
All of that as part of the on all the things that we learn about him. But even before that, they talk about the tales of the unexpected and the one about the guy who's lost his head. And Carl says, no.
And he went, oh, no, he said, it wouldn't be for that long. And then he went, if it was a chicken, it would work. Imagine remaking that film, but it's two chickens in horrendous car crash.
Their own fault for driving.
And that's before they get to the white van, Carl, where it starts with Steve asking Carl, what do you make of the first genetically modified baby? That simple question. It leads us on to, like you said, him talking about flogging little flowers in cups as a kid. The family on his street who had a good looking kid and they had a horse in the house.
A kid used to take a horse into the house.
Sorry.
Whoa, Neddy.
What do you mean a kid used to take a horse into the house? Where did he get a horse?
Must have nicked it from somewhere. Must have.
Has he seen a horse in it? No.
What, is that from outside the saloon round the corner?
Yeah, was it just tied up with a bit of leather?
Yeah.
That's great. Big Jake come looking for it.
I'd been out.
Sorry, let me get this. This was before the lynching stopped or after.
Where did he get a horse from? What do you mean he must have nicked it? His mum said, where'd you get that from? I bought it. All right then, but keep it out the kitchen.
I don't want you going Catelyn rustling.
Where did he get a horse from, Carl? And how long did he have it for? Was he leading it or riding it? Mum, open the door, I can't stop it.
Open the patio door as well.
Looks like we got us a runaway. What do you mean?
I don't know, but the thing is they couldn't afford to buy one because they're not cheap. So I'm just guessing. Maybe that's wrong of me.
And not only is that all just like 10 minutes of the best radio ever, as we talked about in the when we were talking about this episode, it's got the most high stakes out and they nail it by asking the next white van man question about the square tins at Sainsbury's.
Finally, white van man. What do you make of the fact that Sainsbury's are bringing in square tins?
Is that true?
Concern for you?
Is that true?
Apparently so.
Why? Because like it's easier to stack.
This is what the guy in the Sun has said. That should be interesting. That should be his comment on Sainsbury's are bringing in square tins. That should be interesting for meatballs. Ricky's just collapsed on the floor. Let's just play a song, Carl. I don't think even you can top that.
Also, Carl writes, he brings up the idea for putting jokes in sympathy cards because he rationalizes that that's when you need a laugh, not on your birthday. It's already happy. So he's like, why don't you put something that brings a smile? You know, sorry for your loss. It's a joke.
At least you're still alive. Hands down, the best episode of Series 1 is Episode 19, according to Zach and I. Maybe you disagree. Maybe you've got a different top 5. 1-333-333. Give us a call. What's your top five? Please call us right now. No, you can email us, though, your top five, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com, or get involved on Instagram, carly.pilkboys. All right, that's our top five.
A radio thing, well, you just throw the number out there. We spoke about not getting calls earlier or being afraid of getting calls. Do you know how we got around that, or a way that you can get around that and remove any of the fear, is build the idea of not getting calls into the idea.
As if in one of you put, issuing a challenge?
I think one thing, the other person thinks something else, and we don't get any calls on it. That proves this. That was most of our segments. So if you don't get calls, oh, well, you're wrong, Don.
I've been a part of shows where we're like, okay, we're not going to get calls on this one. So say that. Throw it out as a challenge. Like, oh, there's no way anyone's going to call for this. No, you're off. Yeah, that's a classic one.
Reverse psychology.
So our top
five.
There
won't be anyone in the world that will call for this.
No way. Oh, look at that. I've been proven wrong. Phew.
Oh, no. I feel like such a goose.
So our top fives. I did a top six. So my first one was episode 14. Then five, Zach was at 15. Mine was at 3. 4, Zach chose episode 5. I chose episode 8. 3, Zach chose episode 8. I chose episode 15. 2, Zach chose episode 16. I chose episode 23. And we both chose episode 19 for our number ones. Here are some notable moments that from other episodes that did not make the top five. And I'll just rattle through these. There's quite a few. In show 2, Carl says he's a bit livid and gives no explanation. Ricky's movie reviews, they didn't last long. I wish they had come back. In show 4, Carl thought giants actually existed. Show 5, Carl had a pet magpie. Oh, no, you did choose show 5, didn't you? Show 6, Carl's quiz and the iconic delivery of where, what? Show 9, Ricky says Carl might be the most interesting man in the world. Show 10, Ricky and Steve's improvised riff as the bodyguards of the US president who was assassinated. That's a very, very funny moment.
I forgot about that.
In show 12, the first ever white van Carl. And Carl tells us he scored a goal in soccer once, and that was because he was being chased by a bee.
That would be in my top five bits.
Chased by a bee, right.
Yeah, such a good story.
Okay, yeah. We had a bit of a conversation about whether or not to do best shows or best bits. Okay. In show 17, Ricky notices Carl's round head for the first time. In show 20, Carl's mum said there were cruise ships so big they have rough areas. And it's the one where Carl reveals that his dad put a kid with disabilities in a wheelie bin. Show 21, Carl is going to the BAFTAs as Steve's date. And he also confessed to his mum that he'd been stealing when he was a kid. And he gives Ricky and Steve his 3 lateral thinking problems. And show 22, when Carl absolutely roasts the BAFTAs as the worst thing he's ever had to do. So many highlights. So many good times. Series 1 of...
Comprehensive list.
The future of the show, of this show, the Carly Pilk Boys... we will do series 2, and I can't wait to get into that, but we are going to take a break. Sorry, Keith. Yep. Takes. Destroyed man. I think we're going to take a break and recommence early in the new year, because look, we're basically halfway through November. We'll take a break in December. We've got some things going on in our personal lives that we've got to sort of focus on. I know I certainly do, but we will be back with series 2. I'm so pumped to get into the Rockbusters era of the show. We are also thinking of starting a Patreon for the Carly Pilk Boys, which on which the show will be available a week early and ad-free, plus there will be additional content. We are talking about doing a whole other side spin-off podcast called The Bready Brett Boys, where we will cover non-XFM Carl, Ricky and Steve content, like... I think we'd probably start with doing Idiot Abroad. We could do Sick of It. We could do the Comedy Lab podcast pilot that I talked about last week, the one that Carl made. We could cover the little films that Carl made that Mary didn't like. There was a whole run of Ricky Gervais show vlogs that they did for a little while. So all that sort of stuff we would cover in a Patreon-only podcast called The Bready Brett Boys. In the meantime, I will work on a couple of things during the break, and that is why I've started the Instagram now. A couple of T-shirt designs, a couple of compilations, and I'm going to just I'll just post about those on the Instagram. So follow carly.pilkboys on Instagram. I'll probably put a little announcement in the show's feed as well anytime that I want to let people know about stuff. How does that all sound, Zach?
Sounds good. I'm particularly interested in when you just mentioned the vlogs and stuff like that. I reckon we should find some those more niche things rather than like, I mean, we can do the big famous shows if you want, but it'd be fascinating to see some of that behind the scenes stuff, the extra content they made, and also the if we could find any pilots that, you know, never were made that probably, or even on the 11 o'clock show, Ricky.
That's very, yeah, some that's of the early point.
Stuff Ricky did.
Yep. I like the idea of that for sure. There's a lot of stuff content made for DVD extras and a lot of just internet only stuff. That there's like sketches. There's a really funny sketch that Ricky and Steve made. I don't even know who it was for. Maybe it was even for the Comedy Lab, where Ricky is playing a David Bowie impersonator at like a board meeting for a video shop. It's awesome. It's really, really funny. But yeah, it's doing something like, oh, we're going to recap The Office. Like that's very low on my priority list because, like, you know, it's been done.
Especially because if you're listening to that spin-off podcast, you're really down the hole. so I don't know, like, you know, I don't know how it might be more interesting to find some stuff that's equally as far down the hole.
That's true.
Rather than just like, you know,
yeah, going to the obvious office. Stuff. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, we've got a little while to think
actually,
about that.
I haven't watched The Office in probably 15 years though. So yeah, I might go back and watch it anyway. I watched Extras recently and it was really good. I hadn't seen the second series before, which is amazingly like it's like two different shows, which are both good. The second one's much better when they start introducing comedians. Oh, sorry, not comedians, celebrities.
It's a bit broader. Like there's a bit more sort of slapstick stuff. But the Extras Christmas special where his character goes into Celebrity Big Brother is great.
I haven't seen that.
Really good. Yeah. But I love series two because it's when his character starts having success. And then it comes undone.
Isn't this interesting that all the stuff they made was all, and I guess everything you make comes from your experiences, but so obviously, you know, in the fact that Extras was like about a guy who got famous basically in a short period of time, which is what Ricky did with The Office. And then you're saying Carl's show was basically just like his experiences and they don't even change anything. It's like his aunt goes from Nora to Norma.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, I've heard Ricky say that on a number of occasions. He worked in an office. So he wrote a show about an office. Then he was famous for about 7 years. So he wrote a show about that.
Right.
Right.
And then so, what were the other ones from experiences?
Well, man, maybe that's why Afterlife and Derek are sort of got. Well, he has a lot of family who work in aged care. So that's sort of the connection to Derek. Afterlife, I think, is just a good premise. A guy who was going to kill himself, but then he looked over and saw that his dog was hungry. So he decided to stick around and just say whatever he wanted until goal got too much, he'll just kill himself. That's the plan. That's the plan. We've got a little while to think about things because we are going to be taking a bit of a break. You can let us know what you think. Maybe some of this very, very even more niche down the rabbit hole content that we could cover. You can let us know at carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. I think we'll leave it there, Zach.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
I can see your clock behind you. Is it 5:12?
Certainly is.
Different check out this.
Different time.
It's 2:00 where I am.
Whoa, we are talking through time.
I'm in the future, man.
Whoa. Anything I need to know?
No.
Oh, okay.
I think the blood bank's trying to call me. So I might have to go.
Zach, we need more of your blood. or Zach, your blood was no good. We're rejecting it.
And either way, relentless. You find they out. Really hit you up.
Hungry for blood in Australia. That's,
yeah, they need your blood.
All right, we are absolutely rambling now. So let's leave it there. Thank you so much for checking out Series 1 of the Carly Pilk Boys. We'll see you next time for Series 2. See you then, Zach.
Bye. See you. Bye.
That's good, yeah. Stuff, that's very good.